Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Wisconsin Badgers podcast. Joining you in the aftermath of the 2018-2019 basketball season. No secret, you know what happened. The Badgers fall in the first round of the NCAA tournament to Oregon. It's ugly. They lose in a 5-12 game. 3-12 seeds winning in the first round of this year's Big Dance. Marquette was a first-round exit as well in the same fashion. And the season ended pretty quickly for Wisconsin basketball fans. We are now setting up here for the Final Four with Auburn, Texas Tech, Michigan State, and Virginia, with Wisconsin's own Tony Bennett leading the way. That is set for next weekend. But let's talk a little bit Badgers. Let's look way ahead to the basketball season 2019-2020. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast. Hopefully you found us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. If you didn't, you sure can. And give us a rating and review at Apple Podcasts. That'll help us out a lot. You can also find me on Twitter at J.R. Radcliffe, J-R-R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E. Let us know what you think. I'm going to be joined here in mere moments to chat with Jeff Patricus. He is the Badgers beat reporter covering the football and the basketball team for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I talked to him about spring ball. The football team is firing up for next fall, and the quarterback battle will be top of mind. But hasn't had a lot of opportunity to watch the spring practices yet, but was able to convey a couple things that he's looking at. That's at the end of our conversation. Prior to that, we're talking a lot of basketball. We're talking about the guys that are going to be coming back next year. What this team is going to look like. It's going to be a really different Badgers basketball team. Ethan Happ will be gone. The sort of emphasis on getting the ball into the post and into Ethan Happ, that may also be gone. Micah Potter, the transfer from Ohio State, probably the highest profile new name that will be on the floor next year for the Badgers. Got an incoming freshman named Tyler Wall that we talked about a little bit. Talked about the roles of guys like Brad Davison and Demetri Trice next year, and kind of what the shape of this team is going to look like. Also chatted about Dick Bennett and Tony Bennett. Of course, Dick Bennett leading the Badgers to the Final Four in 2000. Tony Bennett, his son, was a student manager on that team, and the Green Bay guy is now leading a team into the Final Four. 1 year after they fell in the first round to a 16 seed, they win a thriller over Purdue in the Elite Eight to get to the Final Four. Jeff has a great story at jsonline.com. You've really got to check it out. Looking at the Bennett family, Dick and his brother Jack, and of course Dick's son Tony, being involved in this and kind of what they've gone through a little bit. It's awesome. And I asked Jeff a couple questions about his conversations with Dick Bennett, with Jack Bennett. Very much something to read, something to enjoy on the jsonline.com website. Without further ado, let's talk to Jeff and get a sense of what's to come for the Wisconsin Badgers basketball team. Here now is Jeff Patricus, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Wisconsin Badgers. He saw the Badgers fall, as everyone knows now, in the first round of the NCAA tournament to Oregon. And now comes the wait for the next season. Looking ahead, there's going to be some obvious roster changes. Ethan Happ, Khalil Iverson graduating, some big contributors this year. And Jeff, I guess to start with, just to look back on the season as a whole, this team struggled at times and at times gutted out a lot of impressive wins. And anytime you lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament, you're not going to have everybody happy about that. But does losing there, especially given that they technically on paper, that's an upset, does that cloud the season to you? Do you see it as sort of a ho-hum 2018-2019 season? Or do you look at the fact that the Badgers still finished top four in the Big Ten and bounce back to get to the tournament as the way to remember this season?
Well, the season generally, I mean, this year, years previous, and next year goes, they look at it in different segments. They had a good bounce back year, two games out of first, and lost a couple games during the season that cost them a share of the title that bothered them. But the league was arguably the best from top to bottom this year in the country. So you had a really good, strong bounce back year. You get into postseason play, in particular the NCAA tournament we're talking about, and they certainly did not expect to go one and out. So yeah, that the way they performed against Oregon on that day in San Jose, they didn't hit open shots. They had some defensive breakdowns that let the game go from a tight game to a double-digit deficit. So no, they were not happy at all, and they shouldn't be happy with how they played against Oregon. But overall, when you look on balance, what they're able to accomplish, getting a five seeding, finishing two games out in, again, arguably the toughest league, and look at how far that, you know, some of the teams that they finished behind went. Michigan State is in the Final Four. Purdue made it to the Elite Eight, and Michigan got bumped off early, but was a number two seed. So it's not like it was a weak league. They finished, you know, close to the top in a very demanding league.
Yeah, not only that, the Big Ten sent eight teams to the tournament, 7-1 in the first round, Ohio State winning in upset fashion, Minnesota getting to the second round. So like you said, the teams at the top and the overall depth of the Big Ten was just really something to behold this year. We've talked a lot about the guys that are leaving, and we don't need to hit on that again. Ethan Happ, we've talked a lot about his legacy. We saw a lot of struggles, I guess you could say, from Brad Davison and Dimitri Trice down the stretch this year, at least offensively. I think Davison is still pretty much a rock on defense, but does either one of those guys, because we don't really know who the guy is going to be for next year's team, I think it's safe to say there may not be a guy. If neither one of those guys steps to the forefront offensively, do you worry that this team isn't going to have the offense to even match or exceed what it was able to do this season?
I think it's going to be a completely different offensive team next year, and I wouldn't even focus on Trice or Davison, and I say that for two reasons. One, if you look at the way they structure their offense this year, the ball was going to go into Ethan Happ a good percentage of the time for two reasons. One, if teams used one defender to try to go against him, you would want the ball in his hands to go one-on-one with someone. Two, you space the floor with guys who can shoot, and the best way to do that is to work the ball inside out. So that was their game plan. And with Happ being out, you're probably going to have Reavers down in the low block more. Reavers is a different type of low post player than Ethan Happ was. And the key to me is going to be whether or not Micah Potter is eligible initially, or they have to wait till the second semester, which would be sometime in December, for him to get in the lineup. Because if he's eligible immediately, he's going to be in the starting lineup with Reavers. And he's a guy who can stretch the floor. He can step out to the three-point line and shoot. We know Reavers can step out to the three-point line and shoot. You couple that with the departure of Khalil Iverson. Now, who takes his spot in the lineup is to be determined, but whoever does, it's going to be a completely different offensive player than Khalil was. So in all likelihood, you're going to have fewer instances next year where opposing teams can structure their defense and say, we don't have to worry about him shooting from the perimeter, say when they did it with that with Happ, or we don't have to worry about Iverson. We can lay off Iverson and send a second guy in at Happ because we know Iverson's not going to shoot a mid-range jumper or shoot a three-point shot. That dynamic is going to be completely different. And if you have greater spacing on the floor, you should have greater chances for guys to drive because the defense won't be so compressed. So you're going to – and this is not to say that, oh, they're not going to miss Ethan Happ. They're not going to miss Khalil Iverson. They will in certain ways. But offensively, the change in personnel will probably make this team much different offensively, and probably they should be more efficient in terms of shooting perhaps from the three-point range. And also, you can't neglect to point out free throw shooting, because Happ and Iverson – were probably their two more inconsistent free throw shooters, particularly Happ. So if you have more free throw shooters, you get to the line, you don't miss as many chances to score with the clock stopped.
I'm going to ask a little more about Micah Potter in a second, but this kind of goes along with here what you're just saying, that because they don't spread the floor the way that teams Wisconsin teams have in the past, there were a lot of times where it just felt like, as a fan, that it was just kind of ugly basketball. You hear that criticism a lot because they feed the post a lot. There's a lot of workmanlike points that are scored by Ethan Happ and others. If you hear somebody say, okay, the Badgers play ugly basketball, and this sort of harkens back, you know, Dick Bennett's kind of been in the news lately with his son Tony Bennett leading a team to the Final Four. That 2000 team was given criticism for being ugly because they were so defensive-minded. Do you think this is ugly basketball? Is that a fair thing to say, even if it is successful?
No, I think people are stupid, basically, because, well, think about it. The people who are saying this have very short memories. Because if you look at the composition of the two Final Four teams and look back at the 2012-13 team, which was the probably closest living relative to what we just saw this past season, a team that was really good defensively, but a team that struggled to score. On that 2012-13 team, Ben Brust, Dan Decker, Frank Kaminsky, what was the difference? They were younger. Frank Kaminsky was a sophomore who didn't have to play a lot. Sam Dekker was a freshman. He wasn't a great shooter or efficient offensive player as a freshman. Ben Brust didn't have a significant role. Trey Jackson was on that team. You had four guys who ended up becoming key cogs in what turned out to be the most efficient offense in the country in 2014 and 15. And I know people look at this current Wisconsin team and say, oh my God, we don't have this, we don't have that. If they think back, they were saying the same things about the 12-13 team. So am I saying that this next season Wisconsin is going to go to the Final Four? No, I'm not. But I think you have to look at the roster makeup, look at the context, and look at how, because of recruiting issues and the transition from Bo to Greg, you've had to depend on some young guys to develop quickly, where in the past that wasn't the MO. It certainly wasn't the MO in 12 and 13. And as those young guys developed in 13, 14, 14, and 15, you had your two best teams under Bo. So I think people just need to understand that just because this was an inefficient offensive team at times this past season doesn't mean it's going to be so in the future when these guys mature and you get more shooters on the court. And to me, if you've got an inefficient offensive team and they win 23 games and they finish as high as they did in the Big Ten and they get a number five seeding in the NC2A, that tells me that they were doing some other things defensively, taking care of the ball, sharing the ball, that helped them win a lot of games.
Yeah, that's all very, very good point. One guy who's not going to be part of the roster construction next year is Ty Strickland, freshman who decided to transfer. Seems like kind of a no-brainer given the guard depth that the Badgers have in front of Ty Strickland. But, he's in a small recruiting class, and it is, I guess, notable to see him move on. What do the Badgers lose with Strickland, and do they have all the pieces to overcome losing a guy like that who could be a big part of the long-term picture?
Well, he was a guy. I talked to Greg Gard out in San Jose, and this was before the staff had its postseason meetings with players where they sit down and they say, okay, this is what you think you need to work on. This is what we'd like to see you improve in the offseason, et cetera. Greg thought that he had a chance to be a really solid player. He had seen maturity and growth in terms of just daily work habits, how you approach practice, the workroom, what's important to you. I think this was just a case of a lack of patience. I mean, I think back to a guy like, this goes way back a little bit, but he ended up on Bo's Elite Eight team in 05, was Cameron Taylor. Cameron Taylor's freshman numbers were not much better at all versus Ty Strickland's. They improved a little bit as a sophomore, and then as a junior and senior, he was a key contributor on two really solid teams. But Ty wanted to play. I think there was just a little impatience there, perhaps even more so, with the family than just Ty. And that impatience led him to say, you know what, I want to go. But unfortunately for Ty, unless he gets a waiver, he's going to have to sit out a year. And then he's probably not going to play for another two seasons. So he's got to find the right spot. I'm sure he was looking at the guard depth in front of him and saying, you know what, it's not going to get any better if I stay here. But you lose a season next year sitting out, that's a tough call. They're going to be Wisconsin's going to be looking to add players, whether it's a backcourt player or a frontcourt player during the spring. It could be a grad transfer. It could be a standard transfer. But I don't think the roster that, as we discuss this team today, is going to stand pat. They're going to add at least one person before next season.
Certainly the freshman recruiting class, this freshman class, it was complicated, the job that the coaching staff had, by the fact that Tyler Harrow had committed to Wisconsin before ultimately deciding to go to Kentucky. His team just wrapped up their season in the Elite Eight. From your perspective, because obviously there's a lot of opinions on Tyler Harrow, and we don't have to go in the weeds on that, but from your perspective, how much did it hurt to have a guy committed to this team and then ultimately decide to go elsewhere during that period when the Badgers could have presumably gone after another player? Did that impact what they were able to do with this recruiting class?
Yeah, it left them no time to get a replacement. The part of the reason that Wisconsin fans are upset with Tyler is because he had some misgivings about sticking to his commitment long before he announced that he was decommitting. The staff addressed that, sat down with him. He's like, okay, no, I'll stick with my commitment. And he was taking pictures at Wisconsin and recruiting Jalen Johnson, who's now at Nicolet and at the time was at Prairie, you know, saying, hey, you got to come join the family, et cetera, et cetera. And the staff thought, okay, we're good. He's going to ride this out. He's going to be with us. Then you find out, I think it was less than a month before signing day in the fall, that, oh, our recruiting class now has a hole in it. There is no way, and I'll give one example. People have asked me this, and they continue to not listen to me or others. You know, why didn't they go after Tyrese Haliburton? They could have gotten Tyrese Haliburton. Well, they didn't because Tyler Hero was rated higher on their board. They had a commitment from him for a year, and by the time he decommitted, Haliburton had already decided to go to Iowa State. They were put in a bind by that. So no one should begrudge a kid like Hero or anybody else who says, you know what, I'm going to go to this program instead of my state school or whatever. But it was the timing that bothered some people and basically left the staff with no options at that point.
How does the shape of this team change if they have Tyler Hero? I mean, is it pretty much the same with him soaking up some of the minutes of the guards, or do you think it's a completely different offense?
That's not a completely different offense because you still have Ethan Happ. I mean, and Hero is not he's not going to play power forward, so you still need Iverson in there, but it gives you another option. And, for example, where as late in the season, and they're evaluating why this happened, when Davison and Trice, when their perimeter shots stop falling, it gives you another option to put on the court a guy who maybe he's not struggling late in the season, and maybe he hits one or two or three key perimeter shots, three-pointers, to help you win a game that maybe you lose. So it changes things. You can never have too many guys who can put the ball in the basket, especially in postseason play, to stop another team's scoring run, to end a scoring drought. Yeah, so we give him another option. But he decided, and, you know, his plan, from what everybody understands, is that he wanted to be one and to the NBA. And now that Kentucky's done, we'll see if that comes to fruition.
I said I'd come back to chat about Micah Potter a little bit. You've written about him at jsonline.com before, what you've observed of him in practice. So maybe just to sort of summarize for those who don't know a lot about him, other than he transferred midseason from Ohio State. You said he could shoot a little bit, which is a good element as a big who can shoot. What else have you seen from Micah Potter as far as, and I guess how much would we expect to see him on the floor next year once he's eligible?
Well, it's interesting because when he was at Ohio State, I never really saw him play because the game, Chris Holtman's first year when they came to Madison and really whipped Wisconsin, I was down in Indianapolis covering the football championship game against Ohio State. So I didn't see Potter. He was banged up a little bit. He had ankle issues, which hampered him. His role in the Ohio State offense, what Holtman wanted, is different. It was more close to the basket. You're going to be a banger for us. He's a guy who can step out and shoot from three-point range. He's really athletic. I mean, he's bouncing. He's a smart kid. In talking to him the couple times we got to talk to him, he's really sharp. He's got – there's a presence about him that other people, players will gravitate to in terms of leadership, and he doesn't have to try to be a leader. It's just a natural presence about him. But on the court, he's a guy who should be able to do things close to the basket. He should be able to do things away from the basket, which will help stretch the floor. He is athletic, bouncy, tough, physical. And when some of the practices we got to see, watching him work on the scout team, it was interesting to see him interact with teammates, both while he was on the court and on the sidelines. He sees the game really well, and he's not afraid to share his knowledge and be a leader on that team. I think it was a really important pickup for them heading into next year. Now, will he be eligible immediately? The way the NCAA has been becoming more and more lenient, I think Wisconsin people are optimistic that'll happen. If it doesn't, then you have to wait till sometime in December, depending upon their schedule, when the second semester starts.
If he can't start right away, I'd be curious how much incoming freshman Tyler Wall could fill in. It seems like there's a lot of positive buzz about him. Again, it's a very small incoming recruiting class, but I think there's some pretty high expectations for Tyler Wall. What do you know about him, and would he be the type of guy that fits in and starts playing right away?
Well, they expect that he's going to be part of the rotation, and I saw him during the recruiting process. I drove up to Minnesota during an AAU weekend up there, There are a couple kids, Tyler and Zeke Nagy, who eventually is going to Arizona, signed with Arizona. But when I watched Wall play, here's the thing about him. He's in high school with his high school team. He was asked to defend different body types. One of the players he defended was Duke's freshman point guard, Jones, who their season just ended. And Wall is about 6'7"-ish. Jones is a classic smaller point guard. So they put Wall in him to shut him down. When they would play Hurt's team, who's still hasn't committed to anybody yet, but he's being recruited by all the big-name programs. He's about a 6'9", 6'10 kid. Wall was able to make life miserable for him. And Hurt is a very talented big who can score inside and out. Wall is a tenacious defender. He's smart. He played point guard at sometimes, play a point guard role. Now he's not going to have to do that at Wisconsin, obviously. He is another bouncy guy. There was a play, first time I went to see him play, he was guarding the other team's point guard. He blocked the shot. The ball, loose ball, went to Hurt. He kicked it back to Wall about three-quarters court. He started bringing the ball up the court. The defense didn't, no one stopped the ball. He just decided, I'm attacking the rim. And he went up and dunked, exploded for a dunk over two defenders. So he can do a lot of different things. Now, physically, how many minutes can you play in the demanding Big Ten? Like that's to be determined. But given what I saw from him and given the staff's expectations, I don't think we're going to see him sitting on the bench as a freshman next year.
Jumping back to chatting about the Bennetts, that with Tony Bennett leading Virginia to the Final Four, you've got a story at jsonline.com that you can read right now. Talking to Dick Bennett and Jack Bennett, the whole family. Of course, Tony was a student manager with the 2000 Wisconsin team that went to the Final Four with his dad, Dick Bennett, at the helm. I'm just interested to know, like, maybe a couple takeaways you had from those conversations. Dick Bennett's obviously one of the the foremost basketball minds in the state of Wisconsin. It's always cool to talk to him. What were some of the things you took away chatting with those guys?
Well, I mean, I was there in Albuquerque in 2000 when Dick led that team to the Final Four, and Tony was a manager on that team. And, Tony explained down in Louisville last week during the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games, that he could have done some other things back then, but he wanted to hang out with his dad and spend some time with his dad because he knew his dad was nearing the end of his career. And it's not like he went there to see what it's like to be a coach, but he was part of seeing his dad enjoy that moment in Albuquerque, leading a team to the Final Four. And then obviously last week, Tony does the same with Dick there. And it was interesting because, they have been together for so long. Tony played for Dick at Green Bay, obviously was at Wisconsin with him. Dick spends a lot of time. I know this year he said that he spent the first 3 weeks out in Charlottesville just watching Tony work, just went out there, spend time with the family and watch the team. And if you look at their Final Four paths, everyone knows that Virginia last year was seeded number one, was first team to lose to a 16 in the first round, was just ridiculed from coast to coast. Questions, is this guy ever going to get to a Final Four? Does his system work? And 1 year later, they make it back to the Final Four. And if you remember when the year before Dick made it to the Final Four in 2000, they were a number five seed. They lost to Southwest Missouri State 43-32. I was in the Bradley Center, that day. This was Milwaukee was hosting first and second round games. And when that score was announced, there was an audible gasp in the building because people were thinking, 32 points they only scored. And Dick, you can read about it in the story, but he goes, that shook me. He goes, I started to doubt whether I was the right guy for the job. Talked to Pat Richter about it. He talked to his brother Jack, who at the time was in his third season at UW Stevens Point as head coach. And Jack in particular said, Dick, just relax. Your system works. You know it works. You got to get more scoring. You'll be fine. 1 year later, he's in the Final Four. And ironically or curiously, Dick did not watch Tony's games, not on TV, not in person. Could he do it? He could not do it because he drives himself crazy sitting in the stands. So he finally went to see the games last week in Louisville. And if you watched the TV coverage of the game against Purdue, Tony's on the sideline of an overtime game with a berth in the Final Four on the line, looking composed. And Dick looks in the stands like he's ready to die, like he's still. That's one of the the biggest differences between those two. So it was really nice to talk to some people and put that story together, because it's only the second time a father-son team has made it to the Final Four.
Yeah, joining the Georgetown Thompsons, that's quite the note. A little bit of parallel, too, in that the Badgers came back from that 2000 tournament, and they were an 8 seed. They weren't a 1 seed or anything, but struggled in their first half against Fresno State before winning that game. And then again, Virginia struggling in the 16 seed, 1-16 game again this year for a half before turning it on and winning a thriller over Purdue to get into the Final Four. Want to leave with some thoughts on the football team. We've entered the spring practice phase of the football schedule. Obviously, the quarterback chase is number one. It's going to be top of mind. But rather than focus on that, wonder if what maybe one or two other things that you're really paying attention to as we kind of hit the football season again.
Well, as we're speaking now on Tuesday afternoon, today was the first day we got to watch practice. Last week, the first week was closed. So they didn't really do much today. There's some guys who are banged up and being held out. Tyler Biotis, Cole Van Lannen off the offensive line. Garrett Rand on the defensive line is obviously coming back from the Achilles injury. So he's just doing conditioning work and individual work right now. They're bringing him along slowly because, you know, you don't need him in April. You need him in August and September once the season gets going. I'm curious to see what the defense looks like, particularly at linebacker, because you pretty much have all the bodies right now in the spring that you're going to have probably to start the season. And the linebacker position, more so on the outside last year, was a position where, largely because of Van Ginkel's injury, you didn't have a lot of productivity. You didn't have a lot of guys making plays off the edge. They need that this year. So I'm curious to see if they have guys who can do that. And then on the inside, obviously, you look to see, can they replace what they lost in Edwards and Conley? That's going to be tough to do, but based on early returns, I think they have enough really athletic bodies on the inside. It's just that the guys are young. Offense, I want to see how that offensive line comes together without two guys who are projected to start, because they've got to build some depth there with Biotis and Van Lannen being held out. The quarterbacks, for example, today, I know people were asking about Graham Mertz, and I put on Twitter, Graham Mertz didn't really do anything today. Threw a couple passes. The guys who did the bulk of the work were Cone and Vandenboom. So that's something. But, and Paul has made that clear from day one that we talked to him right before spring practice. Not worried about depth charts. They have no depth charts in the spring. They're looking at pools of players who can contribute, and the quarterback race or battle or, you know, picture will become much clearer in August than it's going to be even at the end of spring ball.
He is Jeff Patricus. Read everything he has at jsonline.com. Badger football coverage, Badger basketball coverage. I'm sure there'll be stories that pop up over the offseason. And find it all right there, jsonline.com. Thanks for joining us, Jeff. We will chat with you again very soon.
All right, we'll talk to you.
Hopefully you enjoyed this edition of the Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast. Not sure when we're coming at you again. It's going to be a while. Certainly the football team will be something to chat about in the months ahead, but that's not going to be something we emphasize too much here over the next several weeks. We'll have a nice summer season. If you're into Brewers baseball, you should definitely check out the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast that I host. That happens once a week. We try to post on Monday mornings. Again, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, the place to find that. I got to think, if you're a basketball fan, you've been following the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Milwaukee Bucks podcast that comes at you once a week is out there as well. Same places. I did an interview this week with Kane Pittman, who is a sort of a freelance journalist covering the Bucks this year. He's from Australia, and he's got a crazy backstory. Knows the Bucks inside and out. Has been following the team for a long, long time. And was a great, great interview. So you might want to check out that episode this week. We talk about the Bucks and also quite a bit about his backstory. But typically it'll be Matt Velasquez, the Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Bucks, who joins me on those podcasts. Again, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. Find the Brewers, Bucks, Badgers. We have a Packers podcast as well. Tom Silverstein, Jim Ozarski run that one. These are great ways to stay in touch with what's going on in Wisconsin sports. Hopefully you enjoyed. We will chat with you again as soon as we can. Talk to you then. Thanks.